Welcome to the Artist Academy podcast, a place where we focus on the business side of art to help you attract more customers, increase profits, and ultimately live a life of creativity and financial freedom. I'm your host, Andrea Earhart, and this week's episode features artist Chanel Jefferson. Chanel is based in rural Nova Scotia, like really rural, way out there, where she regularly sells her original canvases and hosts retreats. She is an energy, mind, and emotions practitioner. Yeah, she'll explain exactly what that is, but she uses it to help guide her customers through the process of commissioning a very special and meaningful piece of art. Chanel uses her skills to extract the right information or emotion and descriptions from her customers in order to understand their situations and create a custom piece embodying those emotions. This interview emphasizes the importance of intuitively making business decisions surrounding the things that you want to do daily. How you create art and display it and sell it is uniquely your own. And just because, you know, I paint murals and I come alive doing it and I love it, you know, doesn't mean that everybody else does. But Chanel is a great example of someone who is living her life the way that only she was meant to do it, in ways that bring her the most joy and fulfillment. So this conversation was a fantastic way to start my day with intention, and I hope that it will be for you too, because Chanel has such a calmness about her that spilled onto me, and I know will spill soon onto you. So let me know what you think about this week's episode with Chanel Jefferson. Hello. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the arts, your little bit of your early art journey into what you're doing today?
Okay. Yeah. So I live in Nova Scotia, Canada. I live very rurally. I have always been a creative person growing up. I was very into different crafts and making things. And then in university, I decided to pursue full-time art. So I went to school for fine arts in Montreal. So I was there for 5 years, and art school left me with more questions than answers. I worked in many kitchens as a way to provide for myself. And then after my 5 years in Montreal, I moved back home to finish my last year online because of COVID. So I finished rurally, and I really had no idea what I was going to do with my art. I was drawing little tiny tourist locations throughout Nova Scotia on paper, and it wasn't going well. I was dragging my artwork from farmer's market to farmer's market because that's what I was told artists do in Nova Scotia. So I had a lot of others' beliefs in how to operate business and be an artist. I was told by my high school art teacher even that if you wanted to be an artist, you had to have a backup plan and you had to also be a teacher. So when I went to university to study, I also did a major in geology, just in case, which was not even my plan. I do love rocks, but it was someone else's belief that was pushed onto me. About 2.5 years ago, the kitchen I was working for was going out of business. And to be honest, I was fired from almost every single job I had worked for very strange reasons. I'm not really a rule breaker, but it just never worked out. I was not meant to work for somebody else, and the universe was showing me that. So this business was going out of a business. I had nowhere to really go for work. And at the time, I had found a mentor, and I had never seen the amount of money that the program was asking, let alone have made it, especially from artwork. The program in Canadian dollars was like close to $20,000. And I had enough in my bank account to make the first month's payment. And it probably should have been for bills, might not recommend this to everybody, but I jumped in and it was not an easy decision. It took me about a week and I think it was the last person to sign up. It was very stressful for me to make the decision, but I knew that I had to change something in my life, change my actions if I wanted to create different results. And one of the things that she had said was, the worst thing that can happen is that you'll be in the same place next year. And that was the scariest thing for me, to be continuing to live this life that wasn't fulfilling me for another year. I struggled with depression for many years. I had a very traumatic childhood and I needed to find a way to express myself. And so through this program, a lot of things changed for me. And I can definitely speak to that as well. But right now, I am a full-time artist. I was pleasantly surprised within my first year of becoming an artist after investing that $20,000. Over the course of a year, I was able to do 100,000 within my first year of sales of being a full-time artist. And my artwork also completely changed. I started working on canvas. And yeah, it's been a beautiful journey. And I'm really grateful to be here now. And so thank you for having me today.
Yeah, sure. No, that's super inspiring to hear. And I think a lot of people can resonate with it. I actually resonated with the part where you said no other jobs really worked out, because I also got fired by several different things. And I was like, is it me? Am I the problem? Is it me?
Yeah. It's not an easy thing.
Some parts of that probably. But yeah, I was like, I was definitely meant to be my own boss and make my own schedule. I just couldn't get on the whole, you need to be here at this time and you need to only do this and you're not allowed. And I was, because there were so many jobs that I was in, I was like, why am I doing this? This doesn't really make sense. Like, what? It's the purpose. I don't feel, anyway. Yeah, it's just fun to make up your own rules.
Yeah, and to know that if you don't feel well, it's okay. One of the things I've really struggled with is I grew up with really bad periods. And oftentimes it just didn't work out in jobs because people didn't allow you to take the time that I needed off to take care of myself. And so having that freedom was and still is really important to me.
Definitely. If you're not feeling well, why make yourself work? Actually, I had a conversation with my mom the other day and she was not feeling well. And she was like, I'm still going in. I'm not telling them that I feel ill. And I was like, why? I just can't miss a day. Like, I was like, oh man, like that's just, that sucks to be in that like position. But yeah, it's definitely different when you have a work for yourself mindset of, okay, or I can just make this up. Maybe I'll work a couple hours on Saturday. You're not confined, but anyway, back to art. So you mentioned that your art style changed and you ended up gaining revenue really quickly. What were some of the things that influenced maybe your art style changing? And then did that affect also your art revenue increasing?
Yeah, so it definitely affected the sales that I was making. I really, through this program, also we went through figuring out what it was that we actually enjoyed doing as individuals. And farmers markets were not something that actually brought me, one, the right clients, and two, enjoyment. So I stopped those immediately and really stopped doing the things that drained me. And I needed permission to create the work that I wanted to create. And as artists, we have a certain set of rules that we feel we have to follow. A certain kind of paint has to be used on a specific material. We can't do this, we can't do that. And so for me, getting the permission that it was okay to draw on canvas was huge, because I'm a drawer and I always wanted to paint big and paint on canvas. And learning to draw in a way that worked on canvas completely changed my style. So I started, something that I learned in university was blind contour drawing. And I brought that into my practice as a form of meditation and really started putting it onto canvas and putting my experiences as well as the trauma that I experienced as a child and just everything that I had inside of me, all of the anger and the pain. And I brought it through these drawings. And it was pretty incredible because I realized that vulnerability is personal as the universal. And people started to really relate. And without even me sharing these stories of my artwork, people would share things with me that were incredibly vulnerable. And I still remember the first time someone came to me and said, I recently lost my son and this painting really connects me to him and I love it and I'd love to take it home. And so it was just through being vulnerable, being honest and showing up, even though it was incredibly scary and difficult, that's when sales started to happen. And at the beginning, I was, what is going on here? And I still remember the very first time I sold a piece on canvas, I was in the bathtub and I was like, well, I'm just going to put some, what I thought was an outrageous price at the time. I'm going to put $500 on it. Cause before I had never sold an artwork for more than like $100. And so this was a huge thing for me. And in 5 minutes, someone was like, I need to take this home. And my whole world was like, wait. And I had to be willing to recognize that there's a possibility that everything that I believed in about being an artist, about being an entrepreneur, about who I was wrong, and that I had to relearn a lot of things and create a lot of new belief.
Wow, that's awesome. That's just props to you for being so vulnerable in that way. There's a lot of artists who I think want to create the thing that they want to create, but then they're like, will it sell? I don't know. And it's just uncomfortable to put myself out there. So props to you for sure.
Thank you.
So I'm looking at your art now. I just actually pulled up your Instagram. I was checking them out. And you have a really unique style. Yeah, with the line work mixed with color. So what's your main avenue for selling these? Is it online, Instagram? Is it in person?
Yeah. So at the very beginning, I was mainly selling completely online. I would just post a painting and it would sell. And I had no idea what was happening. And then over time, I really wanted to have a space where people would come in and view my art. So for a short time, I had a gallery. Unfortunately, I had a very crappy landlord, so I was only there for a year. But it allowed me to create a lot of beautiful relationships with people. And now I really prioritize the relationship. So I get to know my clients on a deep level. It's not just I sell a painting and it's gone. I actually do a lot of research on them, especially after they purchase a painting. I know their job. I know what they enjoy doing. And that allows me to know who my people are and really speak to them as well. And it creates this really beautiful relationship where in a year's time, people come back and they purchase another painting or they purchase an experience from me. And it's this beautiful ebb and flow through because I'm prioritizing the relationship with them.
Awesome. And you have an email list. Do they get signed up for your email list? And so you email them monthly or?
Yes. Yeah, so I do have an email list and it's around 300 people now. It's been grown over the past few years. And I send out an email about a week. I make sure that I have different tags. So they go out to different people depending on what they're interested in, because I do experiences as well. And sometimes that's a mix of people. So they want more information on experiences and artwork. And sometimes people just want an update on artwork. And this year, I've really began working with a lot of interior designers. So that's a different email list of about 1,000 interior designers that I have a close relationship with. And that's like a separate thing. So they get updates on my artwork when new work comes out about every month.
Wait, you have an email list of 1,000 interior designers?
Yeah.
Whoa. Wait, how do you get to know each of them? Wait, how did you collect that? That's gold.
A lot of personal relationships and a lot of research and just making sure that their work is suitable for my work. And then, you know, creating a relationship through that and sharing what I have with them. And that's now becoming a main stream of income for me for selling my work.
Okay, wait. So if I wanted to do that, because I'm like, wait, because I was looking at your Instagram and you have just under 5,000 followers, which is a good amount, but it's not a crazy amount. And so it's okay, you're doing really well. And now I can see why you really put a lot of work into the back end and to get to know them and what. And I think this is a key role. Did you just go to Google and search interior designers? Did you start in your area and then just worked out, or?
Yeah. So I started in my own area. There's a city in Halifax, and I just got to know two interior designers that work. They're the biggest interior designers around here. Halifax is quite small of a city. So through them, I shared my work with them. I set up meetings. Like I went to them in person and I was like, this is what I do. I had a little book printed of my work. I'd love to set up a meeting with you and talk about your projects. So I set up a meeting. I showed them my work and I also offered a commission in sales. So when they sell a work, they also get a percentage of the sale that I'm offering. And it created this really good mutual and beneficial relationships. I think sometimes when we want to create or work with somebody, we'll just send them our work and hope that they use it at some point. But it's also about helping them as well. So how can I create this relationship that will serve the both of us?
Awesome. Okay. And so you met them in person. Well, what's the percentage that you give them?
It can be anywhere. Some people, it's 10%. I personally do 15% at this moment. And then after I met with them, they come to me with projects that they feel are suitable for my work. Some interior designers don't prioritize artwork as much. Some will want to hang your work for staging, for photographs. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, that was really beneficial for me. So there were no sales involved, but I always asked for a photo or photos in return. So that gave me a really good folder portfolio of my work used in spaces. And sometimes the client would say, that looks really good there. I'd like to just keep it. Can I purchase it? And then it would get purchased that way. There's also a form on my website. If someone purchases a painting from my website, it asks, how do you hear about us? And if they fill that out and it's an interior designer, I always make sure that I honor that percentage and offer it back to them as well.
Okay. How do you pay them? Do you send them a check, an online payment or?
No. I get them to invoice me. So it's a cost of my business. They invoice me. And then also it just helps for tax reasons in Nova Scotia. I'm not sure about the US, but they invoice me and then it gets paid through either a credit card or just like an e-transfer. I'm not sure if you guys have that in the US either, but it's just electronic bank transfer.
Okay. Awesome. That's really smart. Let's have them invoice you. I like to know the specifics because I wanted to do this and I've talked to other artists about who are in a similar niche or something that would fit this. I'm like, hey, let's contact interior designers. And like, oh yeah. So you basically just email them and say, hey, this print sold. Thank you so much for being the connection to that. Send me an invoice for this amount, which is 10-15%. And then they send you the invoice.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Good to know.
So it's really just honoring those relationships for me. And also same with Instagram. Like you had mentioned, I don't have a ton of followers. And I believe that growing your audience is important, but I also believe you don't need a huge audience to make a lot of money. We're on track to do 300,000 this year, and it's possible with a small audience. It's just like really nurturing them and getting to know them on a personal level and interacting with them. Because you can have a huge audience of like 10,000, 20,000 people and not sell anything, which I've heard from quite a few people. It's like I can't get them to purchase anything from me. And it's for me, it's how can I create a relationship with these people and trust that at any point I know one of these people will be my client? So how can I treat them with that same respect and same relationship as you would with someone who pays you? And that doesn't mean like constantly sending messages and bombarding people. It's for me, it's being vulnerable online. And then when someone sends me a message and says, wow, this really resonates with me, or they interact with a sticker or something like that, there's a response from me that's thank you so much for sharing this with me. And I'm actually genuinely like curious and care about what they have shared with me. And it's creating a really safe space for them.
Awesome. Okay. So that's how you nurture them. If anytime anybody comments, you give them a thoughtful comment back. I need to take a note out of that book because when people comment, I'm like, thanks, heart. Everybody's going to get the same thing. And I'm just like, there's so many. Okay. That's a really great point. And I need to start doing that.
Yeah. And one of the things that I also find really helpful is, and it can be uncomfortable to begin with, but it has resulted in a lot of sales and great relationships, is when someone says, oh, I love that artwork. Instead of just saying, thanks so much, it's, oh, tell me more about that. I'd love to hear how it speaks to you. Or I'd love to hear about, if someone says, I love the colors, what does it do for you? How does it make you feel? And a lot of times that just that conversation can result in a sale.
Wow. Okay. Note taken. Okay. I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. So these, back to these interior designers, where are they putting your work up? Is it mostly in homes, hotels? Where do you see it going?
Homes. Currently, my goal this year is to have quite a few commercial projects. I did have a really beautiful project that I did for a restaurant in Portugal that was not through an interior designer. That was through a relationship of just meeting someone, a really crazy story. When I was in Portugal, I just met this man through a relationship. Someone had said, I have this friend, he lives in Portugal. I think you should go meet him and view his farm. And I thought, okay, I'm going to a farm. And I showed up and there was this beautiful villa. I was like, this is not a farm. It was a really beautiful space. So he welcomed us in. I just had a genuine conversation with him. And I was like, hey, can I draw your gardens down there? I've been really wanting to draw plants that are in Portugal. We had been traveling for 2 months. That was last year. And he had a beautiful farm where he grew all of his own bananas and all of these things. And he was like, yeah, sure, go down and draw them. So I spent an afternoon drawing his plants and he's, can I look through them? And I was a little hesitant. And so I showed them to him and he was like, oh, wow, you're actually like, you're good. I didn't know, like he had never viewed my work at all before. And I just had a really lovely conversation with him. And he was like, I need a painting for this restaurant that we're opening here. It was a private farm to table restaurant. And the painting was 14 feet long. I had never made something like this before in my life. And I took the project on and it was a massive undertaking. It was terrifying for me to even say the price that I had needed because I had to fly back home to Canada, make the painting. And then he really wanted us to be there for the install. So also shipping wood overseas is really hard. So I had to roll the painting up, get on a plane and take it back to Portugal in a month's time. It was just really about creating these connections and these relationships. So right now that's the only commercial space where my work hangs.
That's so cool. That's such a fun story. So funny how something like that happened. You're so cool. What was the price on that? Can I ask? Or the one, the price that you were scared to say?
Yeah, it was $15,000. So I had never sold an artwork at that price. I was terrified, to be honest, but that was what felt good for me. And especially for the size of the work that had to be done. Yeah, that was what I charged. And he was surprisingly okay with it. He appreciated my work. And that's one thing that I've really learned throughout this process is sometimes we put our own money beliefs and stories on, we project them onto other people. And I am not my ideal client. You really have to step back and view it as this is an act of service for someone. I am creating this painting that is going to help them and I don't have to undercut myself for them, but also trust in the fact that if they say no, it's okay. And the money's going to come from somewhere else.
Definitely. Okay. So you said that you were closing in on 300,000 for the year. And I'm just like, you go girl. That is so awesome. Can I ask like percentage wise where that's coming from? Is it like 20% with prints or what?
So I don't do any prints.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's one thing that I really want to keep the integrity of my work. And also one thing that's really important to me is that the artwork that I create is a really spiritual process. So when it speaks to someone and they take it home, I believe that work was created for them specifically. I'm a vessel. So whatever comes through me is meant for somebody in the world. And I haven't felt comfortable getting into producing many prints. The only print that I do offer is a smaller print through my email list. And that is of an artwork that I have never sold. So that's really important to me. But the majority of the money coming in of the 300,000 is, I'd say about 60% artwork. So originals, commissions, and then 40% is experiences. So I offer retreats, 1 to 2 retreats a year, and as well as some in-person experiences. I'm an energy, mind, and emotions practitioner. And that kind of came through my artwork as well. So when I started creating artwork for people, I didn't know how to hold space for them when they were sharing all of these vulnerable things for me. People would say, someone had just passed, or I just lost a baby, or I'm really struggling with depression and I didn't know how to respond. Because oftentimes when people say those things to us, we deflect and we'll say, oh yeah, that happens a lot, or we're not taught to properly hold space for them. So I became an energy, mind, and emotions practitioner last year just to learn how to have better conversations with people and learn how to support them. But it really blossomed into me being of service to other people and holding space through these retreats that I'm offering, and now offering in-person experiences and sometimes online workshops or experiences. So that is mainly where all the money comes from. And then when I was 18 in university, needed a way to pay for some of my schooling. So I created a cookbook, just randomly a collection of my grandmother's recipes, like traditional Nova Scotia recipes. So it got published and it still sells. It brings in about $20,000 a year just in passive income. So that's really beautiful to have. And then this year I was asked to create a Newfoundland version of this book. So I received a book deal to do the same thing, but of Newfoundland recipes and stories for people. And then that book will be published and become another source of passive income as well.
That's amazing. I love all of this. Actually, as you're talking, I'm like, I have to send this interview to my best friend, Samantha, because you guys are just so similar in a lot of different ways. And I think she would really love hearing everything you're saying too. So I'm like, I'm already ready to share it. It feels like you're doing exactly what you're meant to do. And I love talking to people who are doing that. It's, you're really taking everything that you are and putting it into your work in such a meaningful, careful way. And it's not just about the money. I love to talk to people like that, because I'm like, how can I make so much? How can I help other people make money? It is such a tie with when you're doing what you're meant to do, the money's going to come.
Yeah. And I also had to work through so many beliefs and money blocks that I had. For one, charging the price at the beginning, I didn't jump from selling a painting that was $100 to a painting that was $15,000. There was a lot of in-between stages. So it was like selling a painting for $500. And now I have a formula that feels good for me. And most commissions that I take on aren't under $6,000. And it's just about finding my audience, my right audience, who really appreciated the work and saw it as an act of service as well. But also for me, I think it was one, recognizing that my artwork does something for people. So it's not just hanging on the wall. It provides something. And two, working through those money blocks, because I grew up in a home where I was a child who had everything. I grew up in a really rich family, and then I had a really abusive dad, and my mother fled with us. I was about 12 years old, and we went from a family who had everything. I had the fancy camera, I had the big house and the swimming pool, to a child who was then struggling to pay for food. Like, our family, my mom couldn't provide for us. And I love her. I love everything that she did for us. But I also see all of the money beliefs and the worry that I took on. She was constantly worrying about money, about how she would provide and give us food. And that was really difficult for me as a teenager to go through that process. And I was really angry for a long time. So I had to really work through all of those money blocks that came up, and like my beliefs around thinking poorly about people who had money, because I had connected it to how my father had treated us and that he was a bad person because he made all of this money. And I also never really felt safe to make money, because subconsciously I felt, if I make it, I'll just lose it, the same way that happened in my childhood. So you really have to look, a lot of making more money is looking into what is happening internally. It really is little to do with strategy, which people sometimes don't like to hear, but it's more about going internally and working through those roots and blocks and beliefs that you have, that you grew up with. And we all have them.
So true. We definitely all have them. And it's so funny you just say that, because just a couple weeks ago, I had a talk with a friend who was sharing almost exactly that. She had everything and then she lost it. And she has a very successful career now, not in the arts, but she was like, I just have this thing in the back of my head that where I just think I'm gonna lose it at some point. And she's working through that. She's very aware. But it's a very similar thing. We all have our things that we have to work through. I never had it. I'd always had to build up to it. So I can definitely resonate with the people who have money are bad, even though, you know, just from hearing adults talk, it's definitely a lot.
Yeah. And I think it's important to be able to look back on that and not beat ourselves up about it. For me, it was finding safety in myself, even when the bank account said zero, and learning how to do that for myself then allowed me to find safety when there was money and when there wasn't. My safety wasn't tied to the money. I really had to separate that. And that was a lot of internal work for me. And it's still something I practice and work on every single day. So it's not just like a magic fix, it's a practice. And I think being able to work through those things will lead you to more abundance and more beauty in your life than creating a strategy or plan to bring in more money.
Yeah. Yes. I realize too, as you're talking, I feel very safe now that I have it, but it's definitely tied to that still. And I don't even know, like, just being aware of that, I don't even know how to work through that of, what if it is God? I guess just having the belief that I can be okay, I can bring it back if I want, and it's never going to be gone forever. It's, yeah. But I do have a certain safety net now, and that feels really good. And that's partly why I dive into teaching other people how to make money, because it's made me feel very safe. And I really love this feeling of not having that scarcity of having food. And there's, if a car breaks down, it's no big deal. It's like the feeling that I have now is worth so much hard work to get there. So I help people with the hard work. You know what I mean? Do you have a sense of safety now? Like, you're approaching 300 at the end of the year. Like, that, I, that seems like a very, like, you feel good.
Yes. It's still a practice. I definitely still have to work on it, and working on the fear of what happens if something in my life happens and I have to use all of this money. It's like these weird subconscious beliefs that come up. And so through my process of becoming an EME practitioner, it was one of the things that I am able to do now is to help people work to get to the root of what's going on. So instead of going back into the trauma that created it, it's working on the belief system that was created by the trauma, which is, so when some people ask, how do I even begin that work? A lot of times it's having support and getting support from other people who are able to guide you into why this belief system was created and what we can do to rebuild it and recreate it.
So how do you get these people coming to you saying, they say, I want to commission you to do artwork. These are the things that I'm feeling. Can you create something? Like, how does that process start? They see your Instagram mostly, or they see your posts and they know that they can reach out to you about that, or?
Yeah, that's a good question. So a lot of my commissions are from having conversations with people, and they'll really like my work. And some people do come and they'll say, I want a painting for like this specific strange space. And that's the gist of it. But a lot of people will come to me and say, I really like your work, and this is what I've been struggling with over the past few years, and your work reminds me of whatever that comes up for them. And we just have a conversation and they're like, wow, I'd really love to put my own story into this work. So for example, a recent conversation is, I just met someone at a Christmas party and I am now almost 2 years sober, which has really served me in having better conversations and more sales, if I'm being honest. So I just had this beautiful conversation with someone and he said, my wife has been struggling with becoming a mother in this beautiful process and our family, and I would really love to honor that for her, and I love your work, and is there a possibility that we could create a piece for our family home about this? And a lot of people know that my paintings are connected to story. So it's sharing their story through commissions. Most of the time it's the story of the person who is commissioning the artwork that is coming through. So I really get to know them on a deep level. I ask them about what it is that they're experiencing and also what the energy that they would like to have in their home is. And then on the back end, it's like, are there any colors that really work for your space? And are there any pieces of nature that really speak to you? Because that kind of helps me visualize the whole thing. But other than that, it's a very hands-off process for the client. So I have a contract that clearly states that this is a process of trust that allows me to create whatever it is that is coming through for me. And there's no like in progress pictures with the client. There's no changing things. If the client doesn't like it, it's a really big process of trust, and they just share their information with me. And my job is at the very beginning is to get to know them as best as possible and get to know what it is that they're actually looking for. And then I just create, the artwork gets delivered, and that's kind of it. So it's a very hands-off process for the client. And that's something that I really started prioritizing at the beginning, because I used to do commissions where I would share stuff with the client. They'd be really involved. And if you create artwork, that there's like a process in the middle where everything really looks like shit. And you're like, oh God, I don't know if this is going to work out. And eventually it all does, but it's a very vulnerable process. And sometimes if you share that, it can really shift things for the client. So that's just something that has served me over the past couple of years.
Awesome. So you do this on a call with them?
A lot of times it's in person if possible.
Oh.
Yeah. So if they're local, I do usually get to know them in person. Like this one just happened to be at a Christmas party, but I will set up a meeting with them and visit their home and the space. And if that's not possible, it's just a meeting online.
Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah. So
you have a huge personal touch to this, very one-on-one kind of a thing. So back to this interior designer list of how would I go about giving them a personal touch? So Googling interior designers, maybe that's not in my area, and finding some that could go with the style of art that I have. You send them a very personalized email, I imagine.
Yeah, I would always make sure to look in depth at their work, really get to know their work, the spaces that they have artwork in. And then I would reach out to them, whether or not you want to do that through Instagram or through an email, I'm not sure. And have a conversation with them about their work and say, hey, my work would fit really well with yours. This is what I do. And you won't hear back from every single one of them. There's about a 20%, maybe even less actually, response rate. And one of the things about being an artist is being able to hear no many times, even in sales. Like I wouldn't say that every conversation I have results in a sale, but I trust that at some point, it probably will. And that allows me to have a better conversation with them and not get upset if it doesn't work out. Because that's when things can get a little sticky for the client. But yeah, you won't hear back from every one of them, and that's okay.
Awesome. That's very good advice and definitely spot on about outreach.
Yeah.
Do you follow up?
I would, yes. I personally do.
Okay.
I think that it's important to follow up. Everybody has so many things going on in life. I wouldn't bombard them, but a gentle professional follow-up. And one of the things that I'm a very sensitive and emotional person that growing up was always an issue for me. And now it's my powerhouse and my strength. But also we have to remember that as entrepreneurs, we have to be very professional. So there's no feelings in it. There's no please, and learning how to write an email from a professional and business stance is really important. And just learning how to interact with people. I'm not saying you have to be emotionless, but business to business is much different than business to client, I find. So those conversations are a bit different. And sometimes you have to put on your business jacket when you're going out to meetings and really put that forward. And so I've spent invested a lot of time and money into learning how to do that and learning how to remove the emotion that is often tied to our artwork. These are vulnerable pieces. We're putting a lot of ourselves on the canvas. So learning how to remove the emotion from the sale and the relationship from business to business.
That's a great point. Business to business is very different than business to client.
Yeah.
That's gold.
And I would still definitely be professional with your clients, but there's more room to talk about how things make them feel and what's coming up for them around a sale. Because a lot of times there are objections and you have to gracefully and lovingly handle them.
Yeah. Okay. So to your retreats, since you said that is a big part of your business, you have a couple every year. Do you have one coming up?
I do. In the end of May, so May 30th to June 2nd, you don't have to be an artist to come to them. I love having creative people. And I think majority of the people that come to them are creative. I think everybody is creative, but sensitive soul creatives, I think would be a good word. Or yeah, I think that would be a good way to describe the people that come who are ready to do the work and to dive into these belief systems and all of the things that we spoke about around whatever it is they're wanting to work on in their life at that time. So that's really what the retreats are for. And I'm able to serve people one-on-one in group settings to help them get to the root of what's coming up with them and help them recreate their belief system. And then in turn, we're able to create more money or have more love in our life or have better relationships. But it really starts inwards. So that's what these retreats are all about.
Great. Is it just you running them or do you have multiple people? Do you have guests or?
Yeah, I usually have a few guests. Last year, we had the beautiful Hillary Johnson, a photographer who did a portrait ritual with people in the water. I often have a wonderful breathwork facilitator who comes in and does a very deep and personal breathwork session that allows you to process the emotions and blocks that are there subconsciously that maybe we can't do verbally. So I really have this group of women mainly who are in my back pocket that I can call on for these retreats or events. I have a personal, organic, holistic chef who's incredible, who works in my home as well to create food for the retreats. And yeah, so there's so many moving parts and there's a lot of people involved in them. And it may not seem that way, but it's a lot of one thing I really love to do is work with other women. When you reach a certain point of business, there's no competition. And it's really just learning how to collaborate and lean on each other.
How long are the retreats and where are they?
Yeah, so they're usually in Nova Scotia and they are about 4 days. The one that's coming up is 4 days.
Awesome. Okay. And then so if somebody wanted to sign up for them, I'm sure they can go to your Instagram and everywhere, the little link to it.
Yeah, you can go to my Instagram. We're about to put out all of the information this week for being able to sign up online. We already have quite a few signups behind the scenes just through conversations. And so if someone's interested in joining us, I'd love to, you can send me a personal message and we'll connect. And one thing that I really love to do is just make sure that it's the right fit for them. And if it's not, I'm honest about that. And that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great. You seem like you're just somebody that I want to go like for a weekend with and read a book and just not go away from my go-go lifestyle because I'm very much go all the time. I just want to have a cup of tea with you and talk about life.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's what I love to do. I live a very slow life. There's always times where things pick up the pace and get really busy, but slowness is huge for me. So I live rurally in a place with no internet. I have 5 chickens and a lovely boyfriend and a dog. So I'm a very slow living person.
I love it. I feel like I'm just now getting back to that, like slowing down a little bit and decluttering a little bit lately, slowly. I'm not quite there. I'm still go, go. But you're inspiring me to just have more meaningful connections with my customers and just have that, not just surface level stuff. I am sure that you're inspiring other people who are listening to that too. So yeah, everybody go follow Chanel on Instagram and all the places so you can get to know her as well. And thank you so much for coming on today. I very much enjoyed this. This is a great way to start the day.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And if you have any more questions or if anybody else has questions, please feel free to reach out and I'll do what I can. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Artist Academy podcast. I've been putting out at least one episode per week for more than 4 years on this podcast. And it's really cool to see those download numbers go up and up as time goes on. And that's because artists like you listen and share these episodes. So really, when I say thank you, I mean it. It's really cool to see progress along the way. And anyway, if you like this type of art and business content, then I highly encourage you to get the audio version of my book, Mural Money, with over 15 hours of listening inspiration. I'm currently running a special of just $17 for the audio version. You can go to muralmoney.com to find it. And that comes with a bunch of extras like my art supply list, my pricing guide, recommended book and podcast list, and so much more. I filled that book with tips from my art journey of building a profitable mural career. Plus, I've included the best of the best advice from guests I've interviewed on this podcast. It's the most affordable all-in-one book of advice on art and business that I have. And if you enjoy listening to me here, then I know you'll like the book too, because I read it myself. All 15 hours of it. The book is available on Amazon and Audible normally for $25, but if you go to muralmoney.com, that is where you can grab the special $17 deal while it lasts. If you haven't listened to my book yet, this is your sign to do it. Again, normally $25, running a special for $17, but you have to go to muralmoney.com. That's where you can grab the audio version of it. And that's all I have for you today. So I will see you next week for another episode of the Artist Academy podcast.